I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, another predictable effort is underway to disrupt signature gathering in the democratic process.
What's that?
Just doing a job.
A job?
Yeah.
Like you get paid to do this?
Yeah.
Plus, why do politicians in our state continue to cling to approaches that are not working to stop drug abuse?
I honestly think that people don't know how to solve the problems that they're tasked with solving.
And the debate that never was and will probably never be. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support the show on this Cyber Monday for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend filled with family and friends and food. Yeah, I mentioned Cyber Monday off the top. If you haven't found a reason to support Undivided yet, a completely manufactured holiday built around consumerism might just be the ticket. $5 a month. Undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. We're going to have fun today, boys and girls. But it's going to start with an issue that has started to infuriate me on my list of issues that angers me. This is slowly ticking up toward the top. And it's the interference in a constitutionally protected part of the democratic process, which is gathering signatures for initiatives, gathering signatures for referendum. We talked on the show last week, something I'm very excited about the initiative to repeal the state's costly carbon tax, having enough signatures to be turned in. And it's part of a bevy of initiatives on letsgowa.com, that most of them deal with overtaxation and trying to repeal taxes that are already in place. So last week, Tuesday, I believe it was, signatures were turned in by Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington to repeal the carbon tax, which of course has led to an increase in prices at the pump for Washingtonians. And more than 400,000 Washingtonians signed that thing, which is a huge testament, I think, to how much working class people are struggling right now. So we also talked on the show about the response from Democrats, which was very predictable. It wasn't like, hey, this is great, part of the democratic process. No, it was fear-mongering. Oh, this is buying policy, as if Democrats didn't, quote unquote, buy policy through paid signature gatherers back when they were trying to institute gun control measures in 2018. But I digress. And then they came out and said, oh, if you pass this, it's going to kill the environment and all our progress on environmental issues, which, of course, they haven't had any progress on environmental issues. It's something King 5 News and other entities have knocked Governor Jay Inslee for, is claiming to be the climate governor, instituting policies that cost us a lot of money and don't do anything to benefit the environment. So anyway, we knew it was only a matter of time before the machine started to churn, trying to interfere in the initiative process. Because once Brian Haywood and Let's Go Washington turned in the signatures for that first initiative, then I think people started to realize that, oh, there's a good chance the other five initiatives might also get the necessary number of signatures before the end of the year. And for Democrats, that creates a huge problem. These initiatives would give voters an opportunity to repeal some of the things that Democrats are most proud of doing. And to me, I look at that and I say, well, good. They should get a choice. And really, whether I agree with an initiative or not, what is controversial about Washingtonians gathering together in enough numbers, exercising a constitutionally protected right, and saying, hey, we want a say in this? Why are you so scared of voters voting? Why are you so scared of voters having a say? So anyway, I think for me, I really wondered, okay, what extent are Democrats and progressive entities going to go to try to derail this and to try to fearmonger people into not signing the remaining initiatives? Well, we know that one of the things they have done in the past, and apparently one of the things that they are doing again, is sending out individuals to some of these locations where signature gathering is occurring to try to disrupt it. I was sent this video. It's outside a local grocery store where signatures were being collected for the Let's Go Wa initiatives. And there was a man standing nearby trying to dissuade people from signing them.
What's that?
Just doing a job.
A job?
Yeah.
Like, you get paid to do this?
Yeah.
Oh, by who?
I'm gonna say Protect Washington.
What's that?
Protect Washington.
What's Protect Washington?
Letting people know to think before they sign.
Okay, I'll look it up. I'll check it out.
And so I had never heard of Protect Washington, so we're looking into what that entity is and what that entity, who or who that entity might be tied to. But here you've got a guy who's saying, oh, this is a job, suggesting that he's being paid to go to the locations where these initiatives are being signed. And look, First Amendment rights, great, we'll talk about that more momentarily, and encouraging people to think before they sign the initiatives. But also you have to wonder, if you are a Washingtonian who sees something saying, hey, you know, sign the initiative to lower taxes, and then you've got a guy over here who's like, don't do it, I would just walk right on by and be like, I'm not dealing with either of you. So we're looking into more about who is paying that individual and Protect Washington, et cetera. But around the same time that that happened, an email came out from a progressive organization called Fuse Washington. And not only are they begging for money to try to help derail these initiatives, I'll just read part of the email for you. It was very lengthy. Dear friend, this is sinister. Apparently it's sinister when you exercise your right to initiative or referendum. Sinister. Washington's wealthiest MAGA donors have teamed up with the state Republican Party and Tim Iman to launch an insidious slate of regressive, insidious, sinister, like, okay, a little hyperbole there. And Tim Iman really has nothing to do with these initiatives, so they're just using that to fearmonger, because Tim Iman probably doesn't have, like, great on the left sort of approval. But he has not, this isn't, these aren't his initiatives. It goes on to say their initiatives would cut taxes for the ultra wealthy and let our biggest polluters off the hook. They would cut nearly $900 million from public schools and childcare while increasing big oil profits and rolling back our investments in clean energy. They would also repeal Washington's capital gains tax, defund long-term care for seniors, and more. I mean, totally misleading. Defund long-term care for seniors? No, we're talking about the long-term care tax that everyone is going to have to pay into and very few people are going to actually use. And also, they don't mention anything about the impact that these policies have on working-class Washingtonians and why they are so popular. And it goes on to say, they don't get fooled. The petitioners are paid by the signature and will often lie shamelessly about what the initiatives do to get you to sign. First of all, it's true that in addition to volunteers, there are paid signature gatherers. Both sides have used paid signature gatherers. And as we just showed, there seems to be a paid effort to disrupt signature gathering process. So let's just set that aside. But we'll often lie shamelessly in an email where you just lied shamelessly about what the initiatives do. Anyway, it goes on to say, we're joining partners across the progressive community to fight back against these harmful initiatives. The first step is to decline to sign any of them and encourage your friends to do the same. And please call the hotline if you see signature gatherers. They are counting on holiday shoppers to sign their petitions. Let's make sure they don't succeed. Another one of these snitch lines. Nicole, should we call it?
Yes, please do.
Let's do it. I'm going to call it first on off speaker, because if it's a human who answers, that would, I don't think, be right to put them on, or illegal. I don't care if it's right, but it's might be illegal. Hold on.
We didn't try this before.
No, I don't know. It says, please wait while we collect your call. Hey, I'm calling to tattle. Answer. Answer. I'm on hold. That's nice.
A little bit.
Come on, man. I'm calling to tattle on the people who want to keep more of their own money. Answer. By the way, the number is 425-553-2157.
Possible, including the location, time of day, a description of the circulator, and any other relevant details, along with your contact information. Have a great day.
Hey, yeah, it's Brandy Cruz. There's a bunch of signature gatherers outside all the Costcos. Send people, quick, hurry. No, I'm just kidding. Why are you guys doing this? What's wrong with people exercising their constitutionally protected rights? And why do you care so much if voters vote? I really don't understand why you have to go out and harass people who are just trying to save a little bit of money and who are struggling under the weight of the price at the pump. That seems really, really cruel, actually. Anyway, you might want to change this number, because we're going to tell all of our people on our podcast to call it and make false reports. So if anybody's listening, 425-553-2157, I would highly encourage you to make up a completely fake location as to where initiatives are being signed and call this hotline and let them know. Okay, bye. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Yeah, that's ridiculous. And again, it goes into this, and this is actually the subject of our daily show poll, because I get it that there's an inherent tension here between First Amendment rights and constitutionally protected rights and exercising your rights to participate in our democracy in all the ways that that exists. And so the question I asked folks on Patreon and Locals this morning, I mentioned that this progressive group is sending out protesters to disrupt the collection of signatures. And I asked, should state law require those protesting the lawful gathering of signatures to remain at least 50 feet away? And this is something I've talked about on the show before, because we had a lot of frustration over the summer when it came to how I felt people were being intimidated out of signing Referendum 101, which was going to repeal Senate Bill 5599, which had to do with parental rights. And I really feel like we have to find a good kind of middle ground in, yes, allowing people to exercise their First Amendment rights and to try to make an argument to folks that they shouldn't sign initiatives if they don't agree with them, but also in making sure that people don't feel intimidated. You know, we would never allow, if we had in-person voting, we would never allow any sort of intimidation right before someone walks into the polls. So why do we treat the signature gathering process any differently? And I feel like a 50-foot barrier would allow people to exercise their First Amendment rights while also giving people the space they need to really consider whether an initiative is something they want to sign. So overwhelmingly right now, you guys are saying yes, that a 50-foot barrier would be appropriate. Lizolette, did I say that correctly? Given that most people don't have a real good idea of how much 50 feet is, it should be at least 50 feet. Yeah, I can just see cops out there bringing like a big tape measure and just making sure. Sally says maybe a 25-foot buffer. You can't smoke within 25 feet of an entrance to protect people. So let's do the same for signature gatherers. Enforcement will be tough. Laws aren't enforced as it is now. And I agree with that. But I think if there were messaging from the Secretary of State's office that this is important and also kind of an educational campaign for law enforcement agencies. I think there are a lot of entities, and we saw this again over the summer with Referendum 101, where officers really don't know what constitutes sort of harassment or intimidation. And I think you need to make sure that if you put any restrictions in place, that law enforcement is aware of what the rules are. Let me see here. E says, yes, they need to add this to the RCW, and it should be 75 feet, although who will enforce it? Look what happened on Friday. We'll get to more of that in a moment. Let me see. Mark says it should be unlawful to interfere in any way in the process, and that's the question about what is interference, right? What constitutes true interference or intimidation? Sometimes that's in the eye of the beholder, but that's why you need to make the law very, very specific. Let me see. Linda says, why are they so afraid of signatures? It still would have to be voted on if the legislature doesn't do anything. And that is exactly the point, Linda. Why are you so afraid of people voting? That just doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, so keep responding to that poll. It's open on Patreon and Locals, and I'd love to hear your responses because I'm still very interested. Nicole, to what extent? Hi, Nicole, by the way. Welcome back. We'll talk more about your vacation coming up later. Yeah. Have we had any more communication with the Secretary of State's office? Can we follow back up with them?
Not specifically about this since I've been back, so.
Well, not since you've been back, but I know that we were working on, and he said that he would welcome me coming down and talk to them about policy.
Yeah, let's follow up. Find a date, yeah.
Yes, because so, I would like to do that. Happen. I think there are some reasonable things that hopefully both sides, if they appreciate our democratic process, would be able to get on board with. So we'll reach back out to the Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs. And Nicole, we'll talk more about your vacation coming up in a moment. In the meantime, another escape from Echo Glen, which is a juvenile detention facility in Snoqualmie. And this is like, I haven't counted specifically, but I know there was 5 juveniles who escaped at the very beginning of 2022. And then earlier this year, there were 7 who managed to escape. Both of those escapes involved the assault of staff members, and both of them involved individuals, young people who had committed very, very serious crimes. And so it's not as if you've got, oh, some kids at a work camp and, oh, they went missing and let's bring them back in. No, when this happened last night, the Seattle Times headline, 2 escapees from Snoqualmie Juvenile Detention Center back in custody. But when it happened, the Snoqualmie Police Department was putting out alerts like, lock your doors. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a scary thing. It's not like all these innocent little juveniles are just getting out. No, usually they're assaulting people. In one instance, they stole a state vehicle, drove off. You had a homicide suspect. And so serious stuff. Let's see. And I'm glad to hear that they were quickly caught back up. But, you know, this raises a larger issue. I mean, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families is responsible for these juvenile detention facilities. And we have seen such persistent problems that really boils down to treating violent youth offenders like they're kids in a day camp. And I get it that the goal for juveniles who commit crimes should be rehabilitation. I think that should be the goal for everyone who's incarcerated for any type of crime. I mean, the vast majority of people who are incarcerated, be they juveniles or adults, are going to get out someday unless they're serving a life without parole sentence. And so you do want to make sure that, okay, whether they're serving a year or 20 years and then they're going to get out, that when they get out, they have the tools they need to be able to be successful. But I think you can do that while also keeping safety and security of the public in mind. I think you can do that while also recognizing that, yeah, young people can commit heinous crimes and young people can pose a danger to the community. I mean, we just, this was, gosh, a couple weeks ago now, I think, King 5 News, Chris Ingalls with the King 5 Investigators did this wonderful expose on what was happening at Green Hill, which is another juvenile detention facility in Chehalis. And you might recall, because this has been this whole saga, where there were issues with drug trafficking, with guards there having, you know, sexual relationships with offenders, and just a whole bevy of issues. And you had Chehalis police who reached out to the governor's office. The governor specifically wrote him a letter saying, hey, you need to ask the attorney general's office to investigate. We need to do something about this. And the governor's like, no big deal. And this was, here's a clip of the King 5 story that they did on this.
Yeah, it's unusual. There was some miscommunication. If they called a little higher in the food chain, I think that would have got resolved.
They felt like they were brushed off.
Well, I can assure you that we have made improvements there, in part because some of these concerns have been raised.
That is not the case. Nothing has been corrected, and which is incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, and that boils down to the state of Washington, really, and Governor Jay Inslee, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. They obstructed a police investigation in Chehalis. I mean, if you and I got in the way of a police investigation, we'd go to jail. No, but the governor, I mean, you had them telling the governor, hey, there are problems here. Can you help us investigate? And they ended up, Chehalis police, having to get a search warrant. The state wouldn't help them, so they had to, why would they have to get a search warrant to serve, to go in and search a state-run juvenile detention facility? No, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families should have been like, go in there, weed out the criminal wrongdoing. Not only is it dangerous for the staff, I mean, there was one instance where there was an effort to get a gun in. So not only is that dangerous to the staff, that's dangerous to the juveniles. I mean, who are in there, they're getting illicit drugs. I mean, can you imagine if there's a gun smuggled in, who that gun would be used to shoot? Either kids or staff, neither is particularly good. And you have the state absolutely thwarting that criminal investigation. Then Jay Inslee saying, oh, they should have sent it higher up the food chain. And Chris Ingalls with King 5 being like, they did. They wrote you a letter and you wrote back and told them to kick rocks. And so, you know, between Echo Glen and Green Hill, there must be an investigation into the Department of Children, Youth, and Families and their handling of juvenile detention facilities in this state. If you cannot operate these facilities in a way where you are focused on rehabilitation for youth, and you're also focused on keeping staff members, on keeping offenders, and on keeping the public safe, then you should not be in charge of running them. Then you cannot be in charge of running them. There have to be firings over this. There has to be a complete rehaul of the state agency that is tasked with running these juvenile detention facilities. Enough is enough. Whether it's escape or whether escapes, violent escapes of violent offenders, or whether it is crimes being committed within the walls of these facilities, they are clearly not being properly run. They are putting the public in danger, and they're also endangering the juveniles in a way that will thwart any ability they have to be rehabilitated. If you then get a conviction for escape, if you are using drugs behind bars, if you're continuing gang activity in these juvenile detention facilities, do you really think that that's setting up these young people to be on the right path, to be in a good place when they are eventually released? Of course it's not. So what the hell are you doing? What are you doing if you're not doing that? There must be, this must be a priority of lawmakers this legislative session, to push for a full-fledged investigation into the Department of Children, Youth, and Families and into their handling of these juvenile detention facilities. And I'll just add this story in as a reminder of the fact that, yeah, young people can commit very violent, serious crimes. And some of these crimes that, you know, Democrats in Olympia want to say are, oh, just property crimes. No, those crimes can lead to more serious crimes. A guy was just killed, 50-year-old guy killed by a 14-year-old driving a stolen Kia down in Pierce County, lost his life. And you want to tell us and preach all session long that, oh, stolen vehicles, that's just a property crime. You know, letting police pursue stolen vehicles. Oh, that's, why would you, you know, risk that? Why would you risk someone's life just to get back a stolen vehicle? It's just property. It's because of what they're doing with the stolen vehicles. It's because of the robberies. It's because of the drive-by shootings that they commit. It's because of the hit and runs. And in this case, a 50-year-old man lost his life. His female passenger, also 50 years old, was injured in the accident. And I'm shocked and I'm grateful that she didn't die as well. I mean, it's really troubling to me that you have lawmakers who are either so oblivious to the reality around them or are so deeply ideological that they simply can't admit when they're wrong. They'd rather see people die than admit that they were wrong. They'd rather see people die than admit that they were wrong. And I don't think that's harsh at this point because there's so many evidence that some of their policies, first of all, their general posture toward juvenile offenders and their policies around police pursuits and stolen vehicles, there is overwhelming evidence that it's costing lives, that it's doing more harm than good. Yet they won't backtrack. And if you push back against it, if you question it, then you're right wing or whatever it is. And we've just got to keep going to our elected leaders, be they Democrats or Republicans, and reminding them about the consequences of their policies and reminding them that, yeah, young people can do some really horrible things, and they need accountability. All right, coming up next, I'm going to play a clip for you from our episode of Sundays with Subscribers this week because it featured Ginny Burton, who I think has been a fan favorite on the show. We've had her on before. She's a 17-time felon, former drug addict, who's now dedicated her life to trying to get elected leaders to wake the heck up when it comes to what's working and not working to deal with our homelessness crisis, our crime crisis, our drug crisis. So we'll have a clip from that interview next. But first, if you are thinking about putting your home on the market, but you're like, oh my gosh, I have some things that I need to do to it. I need to do some updates, upgrades. I don't have the time. I don't have the money. Well, have no fear. Our friend Wes Jones of Wes Jones & Associates, that is what he and his team specialize in, is coming in, making sure that if you have any projects that need to be done to your home, they handle that. They manage the projects. They can even help pay for it up front. Susan in Federal Way took advantage of their listing boost concierge service, and she was shocked, pleasantly so, by the results.
I told him up front that I was very interested, that I did not have the time or the finances to do what needed to be done. And he immediately jumped in with, well, I do. And I would say in 2 to 3 weeks, they had landscaping done. They had all the painting done. The new floors were put in. All the lighting was put in. It just was all so fast. And the rest is history. It was on the market for 7 days. I was able to get well over listing price.
To be specific, Susan got 20 offers, sold it for 15% over list price, and ended up getting $200,000 more than an investor offered her before the renovations. Yeah, how great is that? I mean, selling your home is stressful enough. Moving is stressful enough. So let Wes Jones and his team at sellwithwes.com handle the difficult parts for you, coming in, managing those projects, and making sure that your home is in tip-top shape when it hits the market. Sellwithwes.com. Start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. All right, the following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And the folks at Future 42 are a big fan of the guest we had on Sundays with Subscribers, as am I. Ginny Burton has just an awesome story. I mean, a remarkable story. It's what you want to see for anyone who finds themselves in the depths of despair like she did. Ginny Burton started using drugs at a very young age. In fact, the first person she ever used drugs with was her mom. And that kind of tells you the environment that she was living in. She went on to become a 17-time felon, spent a lot of her juvenile years, her young adult life in and out of prison. But she had a wake-up call one day. And for her, that wake-up call came one of the times that she was arrested. And she was able to turn that into really a pivotal moment to turn her life around. So Ginny Burton has dedicated her life now to trying to wake up elected leaders to what's working and what's not working. And she is now out with a docuseries that you can watch on YouTube. It's called Modern America. And it looks at the crime crisis, the drug crisis, the addiction crisis. It looks at policy in Washington state. She goes out, she hits the streets, she talks to people who are actually dealing with these issues, be it police, prosecutors. She has a powerful interview in this series with the parents of a young teen girl who overdosed on fentanyl. And she also goes out to some of the homeless encampments and has conversations with people who are really in a situation very similar to what she went through when she was younger.
I don't know.
Do people come out and offer treatment to you guys?
Not treatment. They usually just come out and offer, you know, food, water, snacks. And
do they offer you syringes and using apparatuses?
Safe
injection stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But it just seems like a lot of it's almost like they just give us things, you know,
to kind of help you stay okay in your situation.
Yeah, but nothing to really
help you
farther
improve your quality of life.
Exactly. Yeah. It's basically just like to comfort you in the time being, but nothing that's going to actually like go towards, you know, working towards a future that isn't out here, or a future that, you know, doesn't involve drugs.
Yeah. And it's not shocking to hear that, to hear it from someone who's living on the streets, that people come out and they offer them quote unquote help, but it's actually quote unquote help that's just going to keep them living in the situation that they're living in. It's not going to help them get off drugs. So again, the series is called Modern America. You can find it on YouTube. Ginny joined us for Sundays with Subscribers to talk not only about why she hopes this docuseries will wake people up, but we also had kind of an, you know, honest heart to heart about why politicians continue to cling to policy that we all know is not working to save lives.
What we need are the real stories.
Yeah.
We need the real ones. So the things that say these housing first, harm reduction, these policies are the answer, the only thing that we can do to combat that is to actually tell the real stories, you know, and to uncover where the gaps exist, to really shine a light on what those environments look like, the lives that are lost associated with that, the people that don't actually end up thriving, how they don't actually gain their independence. And so I'm just going to work tirelessly to try to tell those stories, because I think once we accumulate data by showing efficacy of an approach that's intentional, along with the people who have overcome that were once Ginny in that red jumpsuit, you know, and then the real life stories of not just the individuals that are struggling, but the people that prosecute, the law enforcement that are associated with having to protect and serve, who are unable to actually do that, the family members who are losing their loved ones, the community members that are being victimized by people's choices. I think as we accumulate more of that kind of intentional information, and then we come together, you know, it's like, and I say this to people all the time, you don't have to say it, just get behind me. I'm more than happy to say it. Just get behind me. And so I think when we gather that real intentional and we continue to shed the light on that stuff from a lived experience perspective, I think we might be able to create some change.
So there's obviously the money aspect of it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is this big government cog and the homeless industrial complex, and you have to keep feeding it and all these financial interests. But I stop and I think sometimes about, like, you know, politicians, whether it's mayors or county executives or state legislators or the governor. You know, most of them have a direct tie to the cog, to the machine,
right,
to the financial aspect of it. So I wonder, okay, well, what's their motivation to continue to not only not save lives, but kill people, right?
Yeah.
So what is the motivation behind that? I'll say what it is. Well, what do you think their motivation is? I have my opinion, but I don't want to taint yours. So,
yeah. So, well, I'll give you my opinion, because I think about this kind of stuff all the time,
yeah,
too. I honestly think that people don't know how to solve the problems that they're tasked with solving. Regardless of the position they're in, everybody is being tasked with the same kind of stuff. Like, how are you going to address these things, right? I attended it was supposedly be a conservative barbecue in Olympia this summer,
yeah,
to see who was running. And they asked me to introduce myself at the end. My husband said, not your finest performance, honey. So because I felt like I got up and I scolded an entire group of people. And I said, and if this is what we have to look forward to, we're doomed.
Wow.
We are doomed. And so to be quite honest with you, in my opinion, I think people don't know. And I think that we go through these education systems and we work in these positions and we listen to, you know, the rhetoric. We listen to all of the information that is consistently spread through. It's the same stuff I was listening to on college campuses, and people repeat it to each other and they have conversations about it. But there's no real experience with it. And so I think that they just do and say what they think they're supposed to do and say, and We're just stuck with the blind leading the blind, honestly.
Yeah. I have some overlap with that. So I kind of divide them into categories, right? Because there's the true unhinged fringe lunatics. You know, the people who are like, no one should go to prison, you know?
Yeah.
And with them, I'm like, okay.
I just feel like they should go.
Yeah, let's just
spend some time in a bad neighborhood by themselves at night, honestly.
Let's take you. I was like, let's take you out of the equation. What I'm focused on are the people with, that I think have a good intentions, right? I honestly think a lot of it is that this whole issue has been so wrapped up in identitarianism, where it was made about race, right? It was made about equity and race outcomes when it comes to homelessness and substance abuse. And I think the well-intentioned people are so scared about pushing back
against an issue
that has been made about equity.
I think people are afraid to speak up about anything, even if they're across the board, not even just our lawmakers. And we have to recognize, too, that politicians, officials, lawmakers, they're just people.
Yeah.
They're just people, and many just don't know. And so they're going with the most common, commonly shared professional message and trying to make it seem like they know what they're talking about. And I mean, honestly, I just think they don't know.
They don't know. If you want to watch that full interview, it was on Sundays with Subscribers yesterday. Sign up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. If you've been looking for a reason to sign up, in addition to today's consumerism holiday, listening to Ginny Burton is a great one. And again, the docuseries is called Modern America. You can find it on YouTube. I highly recommend going through and watching the episodes that she's posted so far, because there's something really wonderful about the way that she does this compared to, you know, sort of a traditional journalist, because she's been there. She knows the questions to ask these people who are living on the streets, because she has been there herself. And so it's very raw, it's very emotional, and she just does a great job. And I'm really grateful for Ginny Burton. I was saying on social media yesterday, if we had just a couple Ginny Burtons in Olympia, things would be a whole lot more fun, because the woman just speaks her mind, and we need more of that. But I also think that this state would be much, much better off. So check out that whole interview, undividedpod.com. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, we're going to do a trifecta of unbelievable. Nicole thought we were just doing two. We're going to add a third one. It's going to be a surprise for you. But first, we've been talking to our friend. I'm laughing about this because did you guys know Costco was selling... We talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago. Costco was selling 1 ounce gold bars, which is funny because it's like, of course Costco would sell 1 ounce gold bars. But it got Nicole and I talking about, is gold a good investment, especially with the state of the economy? And I mean, if you're up past midnight, you see the commercials that are like, invest in gold. Anyway, so we asked Zach Abraham of Bulwark Capital about that, you know, because he's looking at the direction of the economy. So should we be diversifying our portfolio by adding gold to it? Here's what he had to say.
People think about gold the wrong way. First of all, gold should not be an investment. It's not an investment. Why is it not an investment? Because it doesn't have any cash flow, right? There's also no one-off thing that makes gold go up. So people go, well, inflation does. And I go, oh, really? Well, look at how gold performed last year when inflation was the hottest in 40 years. It did virtually nothing. Gold is a wonderful, wonderful insurance policy. Take it from a guy that has been around the industry, that has made a lot of money investing in gold mining. It's great to have 5, maybe even 7% of your portfolio value in gold, but think of it not as it's an insurance policy if things go wild. People are always trying to sell it. It's why you hear it on late at night, move your IRA into gold. Absolutely. Do not listen to that. Do not do that. Having some is fine. Do not convince anybody to get you to go all in.
There you have it. So if you spent your entire life savings buying the 1 ounce things of gold at Costco, you should probably try to unload those on someone and get your money back. Anyway, to hear more advice like that, listen to Zach's weekly radio show, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com, and you can find out how he and his team at Bulwark Capital are managing risk on people's portfolios right now, especially as we head into worrisome economic times. The time to manage your risk is not when it's too late. The time to manage your risk is now. As my mom found out, Nicole, did you hear that? You were on vacation. Did you hear that?
I listened to the shows that
even
I missed.
Even though you were gone?
Of course I did.
You know, maybe you should come on and we'll start with, just stay there. Yeah, so I said this on the show last week, but we tease these webinars, live webinars that Zach Abraham does like a couple times a year. He just had his final one of the year. He'll have another one next year. And I was calling my mom that later that day and I go, oh, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, I just got off watching your friend Zach. And I go, what? And I go, watch. So I thought maybe she was watching the show and his segment. No, she was on his live webinar trying to figure out what to do with her retirement.
I love that I love that she didn't even consult you about it. She didn't say, she didn't hey, can I get in? Hey, can you help me with this? Whatever. No, she just went for it.
No, she just signed up. She's like, I learned a lot. And, you know, she's worked hard her whole life. She's new in retirement. She's worried about the risk. Anyway, so I thought that was funny. Sandy. We love Sandy. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Nicole, can you hit Unbelievable for me? So we've got two unbelievables to get to, but I'm adding a third one because you said your vacation, start of your vacation was truly unbelievable. Let's just get like a truncated version of the whole.
Okay,
let's
do not be crazy. Version.
But the story on my side is you leave right after the show on
Thursday
mm-hmm. of like the week before last. And it's like 1:30 p.m. And then you're texting me from Vegas at like 11 p.m. that you're not even, that you're not in Costa Rica yet. And then you had to leave your cousin behind and her kids.
Well, so what happened was the night before Thursday, yeah. So Wednesday night, I'm home packing, getting all the last stuff, mm-hmm. last minute stuff together. And my cousin calls me at 11 p.m. bawling because she just realized that her two kids, the kids that we were taking with us, they're 15 and 18, their passports expired last month.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And so we spent all night trying to figure out if it was even possible to get passports renewed in a day, right?
Yeah.
And I ended up getting a hold of, or we ended up getting a hold of the DC US passport office yeah. at 5 a.m., made an appointment for the Seattle office at 10 a.m., and she went there. She had to get the kid's dad, so they're not married anymore, and she had to get him on board with showing up and doing all this stuff to get them their passports. And then once they got there and said, okay, well, it's possible, our flight left at 3:50, they said it's possible, but we're not sure when we'll get them back. So we'll put it in and we'll see when it comes back. Yep. And so it ended up coming back about 12:30.
They got
it. They got
it. Which is shocking.
Yeah, shocking.
That the government could work that
fast. I can't
even
believe it. It was the 18-year-old's birthday. And yep. so they said that a lot of people were like, oh, it's your birthday. Oh, so maybe that helped.
Yeah.
But anyway, they picked me up. We got to the airport in the nick of time. And we've done that like Spot Saver. So yeah. if you haven't done Spot Saver
at SeaTac,
you have to do it.
You
I have
should get
pre-check, but
Nicole.
The kids didn't. No, I do.
Okay.
But I was traveling with people that didn't. So anyway, we ended up doing that. We missed our appointment, but they let us through anyway. We literally were the last people on the plane, right? So we get on the plane. I'm sitting in the front, but I have to take my bag to the back and put it above the seats, right? And I go back to my seat. My cousin is in the back with the kids. She puts her suitcase under the seat. It fit. But just as they were getting ready to close the door, a flight attendant walked by my cousin and says, oh, your bag's a little too big. I'll just make that more comfortable for you. Just pick it up in Vegas. And she's like, okay, because we were going Seattle, Vegas, Vegas, LA, LA, Costa Rica.
Yeah.
So she says, okay. And then he takes the bag and whatever. So I'm away from her, so I don't see this happen.
Yeah.
So then when we get off the plane, I say, where's your bag? And she says, oh, I have to go get it. And I was like, what?
Outside security.
Outside
get
security.
It. Come back in.
They checked it instead of gate checking it
Ridiculous.
To the thing. Right. But here's the kicker.
Truncate. We got to get to news.
I know. But here's the kicker. So I say, well, we don't have time to go get your bag. We'll have to get on the next flight. And I said, where are the passports? They were in that bag. So we have to go get on this plane without the passports. We can't get to Costa Rica without the passports. There's no more planes to get to LA in time to get the passports. So I ended up texting on the plane with the supervisor who put it on a different airline. We were on Alaska. They put it on a United plane. He is texting me while I'm on the plane. I swear, like, I've handed it off. Well, then we get there. The flight's delayed. So it's landing 20 minutes before our Costa Rica flight takes off. And so the boys and I are standing outside the gate while my cousin goes down to baggage claim to get the bag from United. And she's waiting. All the bags come off. No bag. They forgot to put it on the plane. So meanwhile,
gosh.
I'm up by the gate. We can't get on the plane. And
you can get on the plane.
Well, that's the thing. So I said to the lady, like, are there four seats on the plane tomorrow? And she said, there's three.
Oh.
And so I had to leave the boys at the gate, get on the plane, fly all night. She had to go to a hotel with the boys for the night and then get the passports back in the morning. and come to Costa Rica a day late.
Oh my gosh, that would happen to you. And that is unbelievable.
It is crazy. It is the wildest. Anyway.
Your cousin's really, she really failed.
She did. I know all of that stuff, not my fault.
That is not Nicole's fault. And I know you're a good fixer. So you were doing everything. I mean, the fact that you got the government to get 2 passports for these teenagers less than a day is quite the effort.
Yeah, we did a lot.
Can you get the government to do other things more quickly?
I wish.
Truly unbelievable. We'll talk more about your vacation in comments. All right, let's get to our second edition of Unbelievable. Ooh, and this one's truly a doozy. It takes us to Voyager Elementary in Gig Harbor, Washington. So we got this from a viewer who has a third grader at the school, sent us the video we're about to play, which is wild. So this is the week of Thanksgiving, so before school is let out, and they do these morning announcements, as most schools do, but now they've got them, they also do it virtually, so it's on video or whatever. And they hand the microphone, I guess, over to a...
Well, they're on Zoom.
A grade schooler, right? Mm-hmm. And let the child deliver what they say is a very important message. So Nicole has bleeped out the name of the child and blurred the face of the child because we're not that kind of podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, we respect that kids are minors. But we wanted to also share with you the important message that Voyager Elementary in Gig Harbor, Washington allowed this grade schooler to relay to her fellow students.
She has a special message for all of us.
Hi, I'm from Ms. McNeish's class. And today I'd like to introduce you to something called pronouns. Some of you know what pronouns are, and for the people who don't, pronouns are somewhat new because my mom told me when she was young she didn't have them, well, some of them. But pronouns are different but useful. My pronouns are she, her, but as I like to say as her, she, his. And the different pronouns are she, her, he, him, and the somewhat new ones, they, them. But when I was out and about, I met someone and they were around a lot of people and they were calling, all of the people around them were calling them she, her, because, and so I asked them, what are your pronouns? They said they, them. And then I said, why don't you just tell them? They said, nah. I said, your choice. But I still felt bad for them. That's why I'm here today. If no one respects your pronouns, tell them. And if they still don't respect them, tell an adult. And just tell them your pronouns.
You guys, look, okay, let me just say this as a preface, because we're not mean on this podcast.
No.
Well, depends on if it's like a politician.
Of course not.
When it's a child, of course not. I think that a child who wants to make someone feel welcome and accepted is not a bad thing. Let me just say that. You know, golden rule, I think if you saw this young girl who says that she felt like this person was uncomfortable and wanted to make sure they felt comfortable, I think that is a kid with a kind heart. No issues with that whatsoever. What I do have an issue with is for grade schoolers who are, how old's a third grader?
Probably
7, 8, 9. For them to, during the morning announcements, be given a spiel about pronouns and how, oh, my mom didn't have pronouns. Yeah, they did have pronouns.
Right.
Now there are new pronouns. And it just gets into this, again, area where this should not be happening in schools. And the mom who sent us this said, luckily, my husband and I are constantly in my children's ears about these topics, so we are able to counteract the talking point. But again, this is the mom of a third grader. Should you as a parent have to be in your kid's ear as a third grader about made-up pronouns that are being used and talked about at school? No, because these conversations shouldn't be happening in our schools. I mean, there is, we could get into the whole biological debate or whatever it is. You guys all know how I feel about that. But at the same time, the mom of a third grader should not have to worry that at the morning school announcements, her third grader was given a spiel about pronouns and about what pronouns you should and should not be using.
I feel like they're being mistaught on pronouns. So they're assigning pronouns to people, not, you know, that's your pronoun. It belongs to you. Well, no, pronouns is a, it's like a grammar thing. This is how you speak. This is how you identify. I mean, it would be so confusing to look at that in other languages, which are often like, you know, like for instance, Spanish, how the word changes based on the
yeah, what do they do the for Spanish? Male, it's like an O or an A at the end.
And I just think that this is sad because she obviously doesn't know what a pronoun is.
Right.
That's, she's just assigning it to a person and she doesn't know what it is.
Yeah. And you know, cause I, she's young and she doesn't understand the issue that she and I don't blame her again.
And she shouldn't deal with it.
I blame the teachers who thrust her onto this video announcement to give this message on something that she doesn't really understand because she's a child.
Right.
And then you send children home like, oh, on the announcements, this happened. And it is so utterly bizarre and so outside the scope of what should be happening specifically in an elementary school. And one of the things this mom said is she was particularly disappointed about it because usually their school had been pretty good at avoiding the sort of wokeness, social and political agendas that has seeped into other schools. But again, mom of a third grader, and this is the kind of stuff that they're dealing with. It really, truly is absolutely unbelievable. All right, Nicole, do you got another one in yet for today? Unbelievable. I know we're going long today.
Let's do it.
Okay. Let's get to another edition of Unbelievable. All right, the Seattle Times seems utterly confused as to why eviction cases are skyrocketing. The headline in the Seattle Times, Seattle area eviction cases spike as pandemic aid dries up. And in it, they have a handy little chart that shows evictions sort of steady. And then during the pandemic, they go to zero, which we know why, right? And now they're going back up and they're spiking. And the Seattle Times seems very, very surprised by this, confused by this. It says, landlords across Washington filed nearly twice as many eviction cases in October as they did a year earlier, a stark increase after the end of the state's final pandemic renter protections. Facing more eviction cases and dwindling financial assistance, tenants are scrambling for help and attorneys are stretched thin and legal advocates are seeking relief from state lawmakers. First of all, what's happening here is very, very obvious. And the fact that it is being painted in a way that is this is really hard for tenants. Oh, this is only happening because pandemic aid dried up is utterly ridiculous. I mean, of course, when the government halted evictions for a period of time during the pandemic, a short part of that, which I agreed with, although they didn't have to prove that there was actually a need, that someone had lost their job or their income, et cetera, which is wild to me. But as that dragged on, it made utterly no sense. And so, of course, you have years of bottled up evictions where people weren't paying. And then, of course, you're going to have after those evictions or after those restrictions on evictions ease, of course, you're going to have this skyrocketing number of evictions. But you also have much more than that that happened. You had people who were taking advantage and continue to take advantage of not only the restrictions on evictions that were put in place during the pandemic, but also some of these laws that make it very, very difficult, if not dang near impossible, for landlords to be able to evict tenants who are simply not paying rent. I mean, you look at the laws in the city of Seattle, the horror stories that we've talked about with landlords like Jason Roth, who's like sleeping in his van some nights because he's got a guy who's never paid him rent on his house and is not poor, has a job, you know, posts on social media, him out on yachts and on vacation, but is taking advantage of the system that lawmakers have put in place for him to take advantage of. And you're always going to have people like that. And so you want to say, oh, pandemic help has dried up. Well, okay, the financial aspect of pandemic help might have dried up, but there's a lot of people who weren't paying rent who didn't need any financial assistance, whose financial situation never changed during the pandemic, who still didn't pay rent because the government was telling them it was okay to do it and they could stay there. And so now all of that is catching up. And then you had a lot of landlords after the pandemic who wanted to start to try to collect on back rent, who wanted to try to get their tenants caught back up, paying rent again. God forbid that you own a property and you actually expect and want someone to pay rent if they can afford to do so. And then you have this huge backlog in the court system. And you continue to, by the way. Not only do you have a backlog in the court system because of what happened over the last few years and now that rush, you also have a backlog in when you do have a successful eviction case, in the ability of law enforcement agencies to go and serve that eviction. We heard that from the King County Sheriff's Office in the Jason Roth case. Even if he wins his case in the spring, which will be a year out that he hasn't been paid rent on his house, even if he wins his case, which, you know, is up in the air, it could be months before the King County Sheriff's Office could even serve an eviction because they are that backed up. So no, Seattle Times, this has really nothing to do with pandemic aid drying up. It has to do with much of the state coming out of the unreasonable restrictions that were placed on landlords. It has to do with people who never needed pandemic aid in the first place, taking advantage of the system. And now it has to do with landlords who are absolutely crushed under some of these insane policies that make it very, very difficult for them to evict anyone, even for non-payment of rent. The situation we have put landlords in is absolutely unbelievable. I know Nicole had someone reach out to her who has some rental properties, and we're going to try to get them on the show to talk about the strain that they're under, the stress that they're under, trying to, again, we're not talking about, in the vast majority of instances, you know, big conglomerates who own thousands of units and are renting them out to Amazon workers. That's not what we're talking about. That's not what we're talking about when we talk about who these policies have impacted the most. It's, you know, a couple that's in retirement that has one rental unit that helps fund, you know, their life in retirement. It's someone who maybe, like Jason Roth, when he was younger, worked really hard to invest in a property, fixed it up, was giving affordable places to live for people, and then got absolutely screwed over by the system. And we're just at the tip of this. We haven't even begun to see the implications of what was put in place during the pandemic and the quote-unquote tenant protections that led to. In Tacoma, where they just passed Measure 1, which is going to make it really, really hard for small landlords to succeed in Tacoma, to be able to stay in Tacoma, we haven't even scratched the surface of the negative implications of that. So really unbelievable when you see the Seattle Times continue to paint this issue as one of people can't afford to pay rent. That's not what's going on here. Does it happen sometimes? Of course it does. But that is not, it's 2023. The year is almost done. The pandemic has been over for a long freaking time. And you continue to attribute these issues to the pandemic in a way that is unbelievable. All right, we're going to get to some national news that has a little bit of a local tie with some of this heinous anti-Semitic graffiti and protesting that continues to happen nationally and locally. But first, if you are thinking about, and I know towards the end of the year, everybody's sort of assessing their budgets. Mike and I are doing that in our house right now. Insurance is something that everybody needs. And if you are, you know, with some big box carrier, you're probably going to have to go back on your own, spend time every year reassessing your insurance needs, seeing if you can get a lower price. If you were a FirstMark client, they'd be doing all of that for you. They're doing it for Mike and I because we are members of the FirstMark family. We took the FirstMark challenge back in the spring, found out we could get much better insurance for the same price that we were paying. It's a no-brainer. And now they do all this proactive work for us every single year, and we sit back and we don't do a dang thing. Dave Taylor is the CEO of FirstMark, also a Marine veteran, so you know you can trust him. And he says that if you do the FirstMark challenge, it's important that you have your expectations in place, that they might be able to save you money, they might be able to get you better insurance, but you do have to commit a little bit of time to the process.
How much time did it take for you?
A couple hours.
Okay. So total. All in a couple hours. Yep. From the time we gather the information, do the presentation and go through mm-hmm. everything, it's a couple hours of time. Yeah. Right. And so, and I would say that's probably on the high end.
Yeah.
Right.
It ranges. We were chatty. We were very chatty.
A little chatty. Yes, exactly. Anywhere from an hour to 2 hours is the investment in time to find out, and there's no obligation. There's no extra fees if you become a FirstMark client. We are paid the same way every other insurance agency in the state of Washington is paid. We're paid by the insurance company that is the writer of your business. And so, yeah, there's nothing to lose.
Yeah. So just to recap, you could save money. You could get better insurance. You could be working with a local veteran-owned company that's been doing this for a very long time. And they're going to save you money every single year, time every single year, not having to go back, call the big box carriers, beg with them to get you lower insurance rates. FirstMark Insurance is going to help you do all that proactively. So if you haven't already, a really good New Year's resolution would be to take the FirstMark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, although we're going to bring it back full circle to the insanity that happened over the weekend in Seattle. Of course, Hamas started to release some hostages, and oh my gosh, the videos I cried so many times watching those videos, goosebumps, just seeing these young kids and their parents seeing them for the first time. Obviously, there are more hostages that need to be released, so it's hard to be, you know, happy or thrilled. I think you can be thrilled for the families, but even some families that came out and said, you know, this isn't done until the last hostage comes home. But just really emotional. But what was the reaction to that from these fringe wackos who continue to spread this pro-Hamas propaganda? Well, apparently they were so triggered by the sight of young Israeli children coming home to their families, they just had to break crap. You notice how I avoided swearing there. There were instances all over the country of this. Michigan, New York, Florida, of course, Washington State. Oh, in Michigan, there was this desecration of gravestones at an Israeli cemetery in Grand Rapids. Just horrifying. In New York, a popular kosher restaurant had its windows smashed in by pro-Palestine supporters. And then there was Ari Hoffman had talked about, and I'll get to that picture in a second, but New York Public Library was targeting a wall honoring a Jewish donor, and they put bloody handprints all over it. So you get the idea. There was also in Seattle. So I remember back in the day, we talked about this on the show the other day. I used to go to the tree lighting in Seattle. I used to do my holiday shopping in Seattle. When I stopped is when all these activists and protesters and rioters started taking over the tree lighting. Back then, it was for the Occupy movement and the anti-capitalist movement. And then Black Lives Matter would do it. One year, they disrupted some children singing a Christmas carol. And I was like, this city has absolutely gone off the rails, and I'm never coming back to one of these things. So not a surprise that these pro-Hamas sympathizers disrupted the tree lighting in downtown Seattle. Here's a little clip from Cairo 7, and you can hear people in the crowd getting frustrated, just telling them, light the freaking tree. So you got the pro-Palestine people who have taken the mic and taken over. Absolutely ridiculous. Our friend Ursula Reutin was hosting that. I'll have to look and see what she posted about it. I feel bad that that happened. And then, of course, Starbucks, the favorite. Look, this is Antifa. This is the people who they live in their parents' basements. They don't have jobs. They need to find something to feel meaningful in life because they just haven't found it anywhere else. And they do that by breaking stuff. And their favorite targets are Starbucks and Amazon. And they'll break windows at Starbucks for any reason. I can't even tell you you go back to, again, anti-capitalism, BLM, you know, the anti-police movement. Now they're breaking in the windows at Starbucks and committing acts of vandalism. This is at the Starbucks roastery, right? Here's the video Jason Rantz posted, and there's a guy who's sort of narrating what's happening.
Alan, the Starbucks roastery. יש פה בחלון דגל פלסטיני, סטארבקס, ג'נסייד, זה סמל אנרכיסטי, פרי גאזה, זה צבע אדום, כמו דם, לא יודע. עוד פעם סמל אנרכיסטי, פעמיים, זה אומר no borders, פרי גאזה, זה אומר פה you are genocide supporters.
It's a freaking coffee shop. It's a coffee shop in one of the most progressive areas of the country. And they're on there, they got their anarchist. At least there's no question. I mean, Antifa doesn't exist, but, you know, they get up and put their little Antifa logo and identify themselves as Antifa, but I digress. So apparently vandalizing a Starbucks on Capitol Hill is somehow, I don't know, helping with what's happening in Gaza. I don't know. But also, and this happened, I think, last Friday, but of course we didn't have a show. And so I wanted to show on Mercer Island, a synagogue there, the graffiti was horrifying, and it was all over it. You know, again, these sort of bloody handprints, and it said, stop the killings. And I posted that on Facebook, and I said, just horrific acts of anti-Semitism. And there were multiple people in the comment being like, I don't see how this is horrific anti-Semitism. Are you serious? Would you say that if some right-wingers, if this was 2 years ago and some right-wingers had tagged swastikas on a synagogue? Would you excuse it and say, well, technically, I don't see how this is horrific anti-Semitism? No, they're targeting the synagogue. They're targeting a Jewish institution for vandalism. That is anti-Semitic. They're targeting it because it's Jewish. That is anti-Semitism. I mean, the absolute crazy whitewashing of all of this continues to be insane, and we're seeing it at the national level, we're seeing it at the local level. And what I'll say about that too is the simplest way to explain how all of this, you know, this sudden far-left pivot to anti-Semitism, if you give a mouse a cookie, it can all be explained by the children's book. That we allowed them to get away with this sort of behavior based on whatever their issue of the day that they were upset with for so long, and now they continue to push those boundaries to see what else they can get away with, and they took a sharp pivot to anti-Semitism. And it's not a surprise, because we gave those meese a lot of freaking cookies over the years. I really think Seattle politicians, you know what, for Christmas, I'm going to send every member of the Seattle City Council, if you give a mouse a cookie.
I like it.
I'm going to. You write that down.
Yes.
You don't have to actually write that down. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to gift them the book, if you give a mouse a cookie. And then I'm going to go in there and add some edits that make it specific to Seattle's lunatic far left fringe.
Oh, I think we should publish that.
Yeah, my version of if you give a mouse a cookie. Anyway, we're going long today. I'm sorry, guys. We're going to get to questions and comments next. And also Jay Inslee being booed at the Apple Cup, just because, you know, why not? First, if you ate too much on Thanksgiving, which, look, I mean, that's part of what Thanksgiving is for, right? And you wear the, I have stretchy pants on today. You just put the stretchy pants on. Mm-hmm. You eat as much mashed potatoes as you want. But maybe you're left feeling like, man, I really do need to commit to my health. You don't have to wait until New Year's Eve. You can commit to your health right now. I committed to the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program around this time last year. I made it through Thanksgiving. I made it through the Christmas. And I still managed to lose in those 2 months almost 30 pounds on the program, because it's designed to fit your life. It's designed to recognize that you can't be on a lifelong diet. There's going to be holidays. There's going to be events. There's going to be vacations, Nicole. I'm sure you ate very healthy and didn't drink anything or do anything when you were in Costa Rica. And Eastside Weight Loss Clinic is designed to work with that. And if you fall off a little bit, help you get back on quickly. I'm now down 37 pounds. I've recommended the program to anyone who will listen. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Start by simply doing a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. Ask him any questions that you have before you commit, but you do not have to wait and make yet another failed New Year's resolution to lose weight. There's never a perfect time to start a weight loss program, but I think now is a pretty, pretty dang good time. All right, questions and comments from the live stream. We're going to go a little late today. Bill Biz says, with $20 super chat, our sugar daddy. I wonder if Mike's ever going to be like, will you stop calling this guy your sugar daddy? It's really weirded me out. Brandy, excellent interview with Ginny Burton, a rare, reasonable voice. She's so awesome. But again, and I heard somebody say this in the comments, I don't know if it's one you put in there, Nicole, but that, oh, she doesn't have the right kind of lived experience. Exactly. If you, one, she's white, and two, she's not saying what they want to hear. The only lived experience they care about is the lived experience that validates the policies they're already pushing, the money they're already spending. That's lived experience. So don't ever let lived experience fool you. Because I'll tell you what, you sit Ginny Burton in a room full of Democrats, they're going to leave not remembering a damn thing she said, because it's not the right kind of lived experience for them. Let me see here. On what's happening with the signature gatherers, and again, these progressive groups coming in and trying to thwart their efforts. Did I get a call back from the hotline? I did not. Weird.
Shocking.
Mary Christie says, the Democrats pay the disruptors. I have seen them get paid in cash with my own eyes. And look, both sides use, it is legal in Washington State right. to use paid signature gatherers. They did it to collect signatures for, was it 1639? Am I saying the number right? In 2018 for gun control. They are using it right now for these initiatives. It's very hard to, and first of all, for Democrats who would have an issue with paid signature gatherers, you don't want people to get paid for their hard work? You don't want working class people. I mean, these are people who are getting paid $20 an hour. You don't want them to get paid for their work? Well, I thought that was very contrary to everything you believed in. So it's lawful. Both sides do it. So let's not act like it's some sort of, you know, oh, you're buying policy here, but you didn't buy policy in 2018.
No one's forcing anybody to sign. Although, you just show them the initiative and make it more available to people that want to sign it.
And also, having gone out and collected signatures for a referendum, the whole, you have to have it on the sheets. You can read the entirety of the initiative or referendum on the sheet. It's right there for you.
Yep.
And people aren't dumb. They can read it. It says what it's about right in the headline. It's like, restore reasonable police pursuits. That's what it's about. But you flip it over and you can read the whole thing, which I always encourage people mm-hmm. to do. Don't Absolutely. Sign. Well, I mean, that's the oldest, you know, don't sign something unless you know what you're signing. Charlie says, paying people to get initiatives out only increases awareness. With Reject 5599, I found out that many people weren't even aware that a law like that was even passed. Exactly. I mean, if you're going to collect 400,000 signatures or whatever it is, you need a campaign that's pretty big to be able to do that in the time frame.
I think sometimes, you know, us and people that listen to the show, we're all very immersed in all of this news and these things right. that are going on politically, but a lot of people are not. And right. that is the point, is getting the word out and saying, hey, this happened. Do you want to do this about it? Or do you not want to? That's fine. You might agree with it, but that's the point of signature gatherers and, you know, people getting out, because you might not know to seek it out because yeah. you're not paying attention, because people have lives. Lives are busy.
And you can ask questions. And when we mm-hmm. were collecting signatures for Referendum 101, on more than one occasion, somebody came up and asked us about it, and then they opted not to sign.
Right.
Because we explained to them what it did, we let them read it, and they opted not to sign. And that's perfectly fine. There's nothing controversial about allowing voters to vote. There's nothing controversial about that. And it frustrates me when you see, and I've been told that, you know, Republicans were trying to thwart efforts for the gun control initiatives in 2018. I wasn't doing an opinion show in 2018. Mm-hmm. And had I been doing an opinion show, and if there is a Democrat-led initiative or referendum, and Republicans are pulling these same tricks and going out and trying to disrupt and intimidate, then I'm going to have a problem with that as well. And it's just about consistency and saying, you know, if you believe in the will of the people, right, which it should be kind of the foundation of how our laws are made, et cetera, then you should believe in this process as long as it's done lawfully. All right. Debbie says, I've collected almost 1,000 signatures on all six initiatives, and I did it unpaid. And there are volunteers. There right. are people who volunteered our time. I mean, unless somebody wants to pay us, what, $5 a signature? How many do you think we collected?
Oh, man.
We'd be rolling in the dough. All right. Let me see.
I think it's cool that this person, Julie, took her the sheets to Thanksgiving dinner and everyone signed them. She filled up a sheet.
I love that.
And everybody got along. That's
what Brian Haywood said on the show last yes. week, is bring it to Thanksgiving. I was sort of like, are you sure yes. you want to do that? But right. yeah, I love that. Julie said that. Look at these super mm-hmm. chats. Tracy's for $19.99. I'd like to contribute to the book gifts. Might give a mouse a cookie gifts?
That'd be kind of fun.
Oh my! Well, I'm going to do it. I said okay. I'm going to do it. Denise Young says, $5 super chat to help with the book giving campaign. Oh, I love this. But again, mm-hmm. so many.
They'll probably ban the book.
So yeah.
No, done.
So many of these, like, just disastrous, like, public policies and the disastrous state of politics can be solved by children's lessons, you know? Mm-hmm. Treat others the way you'd like to be treated. The golden rule. If you give a mouse a cookie, they're going to want a glass of milk. Michael Dean says, Brandy, can you repeat the phone number,
please? I have it.
You got it? Go ahead.
It's 425-553-2157. 553.
So that's the snitch line. That's the line that progressives are asking mm-hmm. people to call and snitch on signature gatherers who are collecting signatures for the initiatives. So my advice is you call it and you just make up a location where it's happening, but sound genuine, right? It's not often I'll tell you to lie. This is a good reason. It's a white lie. It's for the greater good. It's to protect democracy. But sound genuine and just say, yeah, there's signature gatherers, these right wingers, and they're at so-and-so location. And then just send them out there, just spinning their wheels. And if they update their number, we'll find out about it, and we'll give you the updated number, and we'll render their entire effort useless. Oh, good times today.
I'm curious if you hear from anybody.
Joan said, you guys, I'm having a good time today. Joan said, I called and left a message and reported myself for collecting signatures. Oh, you guys are funny. Okay, let me see here. Greg, is he referring to, I don't know what you're referring to, but the Democrats in the state of Washington care nothing of this. They only care about themselves and money. It's disgusting. I'm assuming that is in reference to Jenny Burton and sort of the policies right. that aren't yes, working Jenny. Around substance mm-hmm. abuse. Gig Harbor said, on Gig Harbor, in the grade schooler who talked about pronouns during morning announcements, mm-hmm. Mandy said, we live in an era of mental illness. Parents must remain vigilant in everything for their children. And that's just good advice, generally speaking. But now, again, I think it's really sad that a mom of a third grader has to have conversations with her kids about stuff that she shouldn't have to have conversations with them about at this age, because they're being fed stuff in school. It's really tough. And I also understand that given social media, given cartoons these days, that those issues are coming at your kids from all angles. And as a parent, you can only do so much. It's like that Wonder Woman gif where she's like, bing, 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 and she's blocking all the...
Yes.
That's like what I feel like parents are these days, is Wonder Woman with her little bracelets, like, bing, deflecting all the ridiculousness. Oh, man.
And anyway, really quick, that comment was based is off the youth crime and doing stuff about that.
Yeah.
And so there was some discussion about maybe parents should be charged with kids' crime from Heidi. And then a different Greg, was commenting about holding the people that they elect accountable for these things going wrong, where most people don't assign blame.
Well, right. And you have to assign blame. And this really...
I point that out to so many people. If anybody tries to disagree with me, and I'm like, why do you think all of this happens?
No, it doesn't just happen in a vacuum. But also, you know, with these juveniles who are committing crime, the environment they're fostering is making it less likely that they'll get out of a life of crime.
Right.
It's the policies they support do the exact opposite of what they say they want the outcomes to be. The exact opposite. And so I wonder what their motivations are, and I wonder what drives them. And like I said in that conversation with Ginny Burton,
rely on government.
I mean, they truly want people to rely on government and to believe that government is the answer to everything, and government is the key to their happiness, which is a really sad state of being.
Really sad.
When you believe that the government is your key to happiness. But anyway, I think a lot of it's wrapped up in identitarianism. Like, what is the woke, non-racist thing to do? And then I'm going to focus on that, and the outcomes be damned, even if the outcomes, like in police defunding, are the most disastrous for communities of color, even if the outcomes in these misguided efforts at criminal justice reform, you know, make it so that someone never gets on the right path in their life because they don't believe their consequences. You got a 14-year-old kid who just killed someone. His life is ruined. So it's just, it's wild. Okay, and quickly before we get out of comments, just for fun, Jay Inslee was booed at the Apple Cup. And we watched it closely. Like, it's definitely because Jay Inslee was handed the trophy because he's a Husky. And then just listen to the crowd.
Gets handed off, and then they start cheering
because
again.
You heard in the background the announcer say Governor Jay Inslee, and then he came on and there was the booing.
Right.
If I were a politician, I would never go to a sporting event because Trump, I mean, he's gone some places where he's been cheered. He's gone some places where he's been booed, and there have been other politicians. It's like, no matter what, half the people aren't going to like you.
Right.
Unless you're at some like really friendly, like, you know, hardcore Republican area or Democrat area or whatever it is. Like when Anthony Fauci came to the Mariners game and he got he got booed. And it's the boos are always louder than the cheers.
Oh, yeah. I know there was actually Carrie Underwood, I think, was doing a tour with the Garth Brooks, and she just bailed because he was getting boos from people that disagreed with his bar stocking Bud Light, right?
Oh.
So, but she literally bailed on the tour because she's like, I just don't want to deal with boos.
I don't want to get booed.
And
yeah.
So I would be with her on that. I would not go anyplace I thought I was going to get booed.
100%. So if I think I'm going to get booed, like, I'm not going.
Right.
I'm
out.
That should have been our sanity check for today. If you're going to get booed, just don't go. All right. But we have somewhat of a controversial sanity check. Look, I'm trying not to alienate semi-bird supporters. I'm trying not to alienate anyone's supporters, right? Except maybe Bob Ferguson supporters. Like, that ship has sailed. But at the same time, I think he's trying to manipulate people, and I don't particularly like it. Let's get to our closing sanity check. And again, to be clear, I'm supporting Dave Reichert's candidacy. Why? Because I think he can win. And I think that's a dang good reason to support someone's candidacy. But look, here's the thing. I've moderated a lot of debates in my previous career as a political journalist, and I know how these things go. And you don't announce the debate until the debate is official. That's just the bottom line sort of thing. But Semi Bird sent out a tweet, again, a Republican candidate for governor. He's come on the show several times. He's always been very kind on the show, and so I'm going to, you know, pay those respects to him, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to call out some BS. So he takes to Twitter and he says, first debate scheduled, fellow career Americans, the date of our, which please stop using the phrase career Americans. What is a career American? Fellow career Americans, the date of our first gubernatorial debate has been set. Please plan to join me in February for this important event. I look forward to making my case and sharing my vision and plan for uniting our state and putting the people over politics in 2024. So I was like, that's interesting. I hadn't heard anything about that. And he put out this flyer saying it's February 8th at Experience Church in Puyallup. It's going to be moderated by Ari Hoffman and Glenn Morgan. And it's a debate between him and Dave Riker. And it's sponsored by the Pierce, that was being held by the Pierce County Republican Party. So there was a few things that kind of like alerted me when I saw that tweet. I didn't retweet it because I'm like, I don't think there's a debate. One, I would have heard about it, frankly, if there were a debate set. Two, usually the institution or the entity that's hosting the debate would be the first one to announce it. And I hadn't seen that announcement from the Pierce County Republican Party. So I'm kind of like, why is Semi Bird's Twitter account the first place I'm hearing about it? So I sort of started to reach out to some people. And then I saw, as that was happening, the Pierce County Republican Party put out a statement. And they said an announcement was prematurely made regarding a governor candidate, quote, debate hosted by our county party. At this time, nothing is confirmed. We will announce information if and when final format, details, and confirmation of participants are secure. So I was like, that's weird. And I had also reached out to Ari Hoffman because he's a friend of the show. And I said, hey, was this debate confirmed? Because if you're the debate moderator, you know whether the debate is confirmed. Like, you're very aware. And Ari said, no, I was surprised by that. They asked me about if we had a debate or a town hall at such a date, would I be available? And I said, yes, but I hadn't heard anything else about it, he said. So even this was like, for the moderator, was like, wait, there's a debate scheduled? Because I had not heard that. But then also I was like, it surprises me Dave Riker would agree to a debate. I'll say, the more debates, the better. I get very frustrated, and we had this in the 2022 campaign cycle, when incumbents refuse to debate, either because they know that they're going to be out-debated or because they know that there's really nothing, no way they can benefit from it. We saw that with Senator Patty Murray. It was very hard for Tiffany Smiley to get Senator Patty Murray to agree to a debate. However, I'm more so frustrated by that when it's a general election debate. When you've got past the primary and you have a head-to-head debate, every candidate should be participating in those debates. And I think it's a slap in the face to voters when you don't. But, you know, before a primary, I don't tend to see local debates done before a primary very often, just because then you're lifting up every candidate on the same playing field when you could have candidates who've done virtually no campaigning or raising virtually no money. And then you give them this huge platform of a debate, which is this artificial sort of boost for them. And so that gets into a little more of a gray area. So anyway, Semi Bird came back out and he said, he updated his graphic and said, update, debate to be determined. And he said, my campaign remains optimistic and eager to participate in the important democratic process. Our announcement of a debate now on hold as we await word from candidate Dave Reichert's team was based on the blow timeline of events. And then he lists out a timeline and he calls it a turn of events, which again, based on my conversations of people who were involved in this, the debate was never confirmed. And the idea of it actually being a debate and not maybe some sort of town hall forum was never confirmed. And so I know exactly what happened here, and I'll read some of the results. You know, Semi Bird is, he talks a lot about his time in the military and PSYOPs. That's what this is. This was an effort to force Dave Reichert's hand, plain and simple. That's what it was. It's very clear. It's very transparent to me. The debate wasn't manifesting quickly enough. The format wasn't confirmed quickly enough. Dave Reichert's team hadn't confirmed quickly enough. I know exactly what this is. So they made the announcement saying this debate is happening. And then they took it back when people said, we haven't confirmed this, as a way to make it look like Dave Reichert's scared to debate him. That's what it was. And I honestly think that's unfair to try to manipulate the minds of your supporters. And I'll say it worked. I mean, I looked at some of the responses to Semi Bird's retraction, so to speak, of the debate. Just the facts. Too bad that the career politician isn't willing to debate. Hopefully Reichert will eventually engage. Thank you for the update and confirmation of my suspicion of Mr. Reichert's avoidance. Come on, Reichert, step up to the plate. Not surprised with these rhinos. Reichert for Gov is afraid to debate as he knows he'll lose. Keep the pressure on. Well, that says it all about Reichert. Dave's advisors and controllers should be advised that this kind of response isn't going to win him Bird supporters. But again, if you were in a general election situation and Dave Reichert was choosing not to debate, I think that's very, very different. Or if Dave Reichert had committed to this debate and it was set and then he pulled out, That's also very different. What I don't like and I don't appreciate is an effort, again, through this sort of psyops that is utilized by Semibird quite a bit, to try to artificially influence people's emotions about Dave Reichert. Like, this thing was still in the planning phases. You knew it was still in the planning phases. This, you could have let it get to the final stages, and if at the end of the day a debate didn't manifest, then come out and say, hey, I'm disappointed that Dave Reichert doesn't want to engage in a debate with me before the primary election so we can have a mutual exchange of ideas. But what this is manipulation, and I don't particularly appreciate it. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Again, it's Cyber Monday. Why not use your computer and cyber on over to UndividedPod.com? Undivided, but I don't know. UndividedPod.com.
Cyber a verb now?
Sure. And support our show for just $5 a month. We sure would appreciate it if you'd like to contribute to our Give a Mouse a Cookie book fund. We'll also take that too. All right. We've got some great content coming up on the show for you this week, including an update on the Wendy Traynor case. So stay tuned for that. We'll see you back on the live show tomorrow at noon.